I had a five-year-old daughter going in, like I said, and she really adored Mike, and they had a great connection, and things were going really well there. But of course, the night before the wedding, she pulls me aside and says, "I don't want you to marry Mike." And I'm like, blindsided. What's going on here?
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. This podcast brings together timeless wisdom and practical help and hope to blended families and those who love them. So, what would you do if your child came up to you the night before the wedding and said, "Mom, don't get married to this guy"? Well, you'll hear how Mike and Kim Anderson handled that in just a few minutes. Mike and Kim Anderson are the founders of Mike and Kim Coaching and co-creators of two online courses, Step Families That Work and Step Families That Make It. Mike grew up in a challenging step family and then married Kim in 2001, forming their own step family. He's a certified life coach, and together Mike and Kim have been coaching and supporting step couples for over a decade. But before they ever got married and started helping others, they came to my stepfamily conference. It was just 1 week before they married.
The weekend before.
The week before, that's right.
Yeah. And was that an okay thing or not? What was the climate like for you when you got there?
I was having a bit of anxiety because there was a lot of last-minute details to take care of for a wedding. Mm-hmm. But Mike was pretty insistent that we're going to be there, we're going, we're showing up. And I went kicking and screaming, I guess you could say, but open to what you had for us. And I'm so glad we went.
Do you mind if I ask? Well, I'm glad you were. Do you mind if I ask, kicking and screaming, what was that about?
I didn't grow up in a blended family dynamic. I had a five-year-old daughter. I was a single mom, but I kind of thought, you know, this is going to be easy. You know, mm-hmm. we're in love. Mm-hmm. What could go wrong? Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah. And,
I was pretty naive, honestly. Mm-hmm. And when after listening to you talk, I think I picked my job off the ground. I was just like, whoa, there are a lot of things that I haven't considered. Mm-hmm. Good things that I needed to consider, but some stuff that I kind of had the blinders on.
Yeah. I don't think Kim was quite ready to sacrifice 2 days of possible wedding planning and getting everything done and all that, because we didn't hire a wedding planner.
No,
we were doing it all ourselves, and so I don't think she was ready to sacrifice that. But we were in very different places. I grew up, I was born into a step family.
Okay.
Mom had two kids. Their dad left, met my dad, had me. Then my mom passed away when I was a year old. About 7 years later, my dad remarried, and my stepmom brought two kids of her own.
Okay.
And we were really dysfunctional. We had a lot of challenges that were rooted in all kinds of different dynamics. And so here I'm falling in love with this woman who has a daughter, and I'm going, I don't know if I want to form another step family.
He was terrified.
And so that's the word we use, is terrified to form another step family, because I didn't want to recreate that dysfunction that we lived in as kids. And so for me, it was a no-brainer, and we didn't have a choice.
Okay.
We heard about this event, and I said, we have to go learn some things, because I just can't walk into this marriage thinking that we may have to relive that past. I wasn't going to do that.
That's what you didn't want to repeat the past.
I didn't want to repeat the past, and so I said, we're going to go get this help, and so we did, and it was incredible, and it kicked off a journey for us, not only in our own marriage, but now at this stage in our journey, being able to invest in other couples.
Well, you know, I have to say, when I listen to you guys talk, it's a real honor for me to go to churches and speak on step families and step family relationships. I really enjoy that and still continue to do that even today. And yet I'm always a little mindful that there are people there who receive it in very different seasons of life and in different ways. And so for the both of you, I mean, you were there like insisting, we're going to do this because I don't want to repeat the past.
Right.
Fear was driving your decision to be
Absolutely.
There. You were annoyed and irritated.
A bit, yeah.
and yet willing to
but
go.
But I've never annoyed her since then, no. Ron.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, clearly that is not entirely true.
And so, Kim, but you were there, but you heard things, and it impacted you, and it made you think.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is we went in different places, and we also came out of that seminar in different places. Mm-hmm. I was in a place of, wow, we need to learn more. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. I mean, we just immediately set out getting your curriculum, leading groups, and just learning more, helping other couples along the way, and just journeying with other step families. Mike came out of it with a lot, and he can share about this, but a lot of reflection about his family of origin, who he had been estranged from for 8 years at that point.
Yeah. The way I describe it is that the weeks coming out of that experience, you didn't offer me excuses for why my childhood was the way it was, but what you offered me was explanations. And so when I was able to understand the position that my dad and my stepmom were in and the challenges that come with that, and then compound that with their family history and their challenges from their childhood and all those ghosts from the past coming back into play for them, I started to realize, you know, my parents, maybe they just did the best they could. It wasn't perfect, and there were certainly some inexcusable things that happened. However, it went a long way for me being able to forgive both my dad and my stepmom. And after we were married about a year, and it was about 8 or 9 years of estrangement, we were actually able to reconcile. And
wow. Okay, we got to unpack that, because that's really significant. So on the one hand, hearing about step families gave you some perspective on your own childhood, developed some compassion and empathy, it sounds like, for your dad and stepmom.
Yep.
And that opened your heart toward them in a way that it had been closed.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted nothing. I mean, they didn't know that I had been married. They didn't know anything about my life because I didn't want them to be a part of it. I didn't invite them into that. And I think it really struck me about a year into marriage. One of the things that struck me is like, what happens if I get the call someday that something happened to dad and I never even at least tried? And so I had to hold some really strong boundaries. You know, it was, our home was abusive, and my stepmom had anger problems. Dad was just not equipped to stand in the gap. And so he tended to shrink into the background, and we weren't protected. And so I had to hold some strong boundaries still. And so I just started with a letter. I didn't give my phone number. I gave a return address, thinking that I'm probably never going to hear, but at least I tried. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, it was a month, maybe 6 weeks later, a letter showed back up. And we were kind of pen pals for a little while.
Wow.
And then finally was, here's my phone number. And then it just kind of kept going from there.
Wow.
And then about 10 years ago, my stepmother passed away. And so now we're dealing with adult step family stuff too, because now my dad's remarried again after losing two spouses to death now. And he's remarried again. And my new stepmom has three kids of her own. Mm-hmm. So my dad has now seven stepkids and me.
And one biological.
it's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I just want to encourage the listener. There may be somebody who's going, yeah, you know, I've got that estranged relationship. And it's interesting how when you develop compassion for people doing the best that they knew how to do, that all of a sudden, maybe the bitterness wall comes down a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's one of the softening points, was learning about how difficult it is for a step-parent who is thrown into that authority role, how that really sabotages that that relationship with the step-kids. And we realize that his step-mom really was pushed into that role, and dad kind of, backed off. And, you know, that's a hard place for a step-parent to be. And we started realizing how difficult that must have been for her, just, you know, to be thrown in and be in charge and not to have a lot of support as far as discipline from the biological parent.
Yeah.
And you can see where bitterness and anger can come into play for a step-parent when they're thrust into that role.
So the information helped you get some perspective and compassion for them. Let's talk about your family. So you're at this event a week before you get married. It's opened your eyes around a few things.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Did you get married a week later?
We did. Yeah, yeah, we still got married. Thank you, Ron. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Didn't completely scare you guys away from it.
No. Yeah. No. And, you know, I had a five-year-old daughter going in, like I said, and she really adored Mike, and they had a great connection, and things were going really well there. But, of course, the night before the wedding, she pulls me aside and says, "I don't want you to marry Mike." And I'm like, blindsided. What's going on here?
Okay, so I imagine that you had a sense that she was going to be okay with this.
Oh, definitely.
And so
she was
then,
even affectionate towards him going into this.
So there was something there. The relationship had developed to some degree.
There was something there, yeah.
And then she throws you a curve. Don't marry Mike.
Yeah.
That's right.
What did you do?
Well,
how'd you feel about that?
Oh, my heart just sank. You know, I mean, that's that position of wanting to do right by your kid, but what do you do? And so, I tried to find out what was going on. She was five, so, you know, she didn't have the best communication skills, and mm-hmm. she kind of hemmed and hawed and thought about it, and then she blurted out, "Well, you know, he talks too soft on our answering machine, so you shouldn't marry him.
That's
He's
right.
a soft talker."
Yeah. Soft talkers, gotta dump
so,
that dude.
So, you know, she was just really, she was filled with some conflict.
Yeah.
Definitely some mixed emotions. She really cared for Mike and you know, wanted me to have a relationship with him. But of course, you know, what was to come and what was the impact going to be and how was that going to change our relationship? And there were probably some fears.
And to note that only about 6 months prior to our wedding, her dad also remarried.
Yeah.
And so she was also experiencing this in her other home. So she's moving back and forth between these two homes with big changes all in a very short period of time.
You know, one of the things we tell blended family couples before they get married is to recognize that when they get married, it's a gain for the adults. And on some level, doesn't mean it's bad, but on some level, it is a loss for their children.
Yeah. Right.
Things are changing again.
Yes.
And I think adults generally really minimize that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think we were prepared because we had heard from you not to underestimate the loss that kids experience.
Did it help? I'm just curious. Did it help slightly, even ever so little?
It did.
For you to know that's somewhat expectable.
Yes.
So then when your daughter said it, maybe it went through a filter of, wow, this is not as bad as I thought?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It was definitely helpful. I was able to stay in the conversation, hang in there.
I didn't
panic. I didn't dismiss. I hung in there with her and we got through it. And she, you know, she was happy at the wedding. Yeah. We have a couple pictures of her kind of got this look on her face like, what's going on?
Yeah, when we work with other couples and we talk about this whole kid's perspective ideas, how do we slip into their shoes and really understand that loss that you're talking about? We've got this great picture of us up on the platform in our wedding outfits, all three of us.
Just joy-filled.
And Kim and I are just smiling, and there's little Annika right in front of us with the biggest frown on her face. It's like, we look at that picture and we're like, yep, there's where she was.
Yeah. Right there
and that is a snapshot.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody's listening to us right now and they're thinking, oh no, should I feel guilty about this? Should I feel horrible that I'm putting my kids through? What would you say to them?
I would say, first, if you're carrying a burden of guilt, get some help with that. You know, that's just not something you want to carry around. But as far as our experience goes, Annika has benefited so greatly from having Mike in her life.
Hmm.
I mean, it definitely has not been easy, but
And there you go.
It's just amazing.
Keep the long-term view.
I can't even imagine where she would be if she didn't have Mike in her life. I mean,
you're playing the long game. And, and you know what I would say from a step-parent perspective is do everything you can to get yourself into that child's shoes and try to understand the things that they've experienced, because every experience they've had leading up to their relationship with you is going to color the way that they connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to understand that before you start heading down the road, assuming that they're all on board and excited and it's going to be the Brady Bunch experience, right? Because it probably won't.
We're We're talking with Mike and Kim Anderson today of MikeAndKimCoaching.com. So they've walked this journey, and now you're helping other people. Before we get to that, I want to just kind of pick up where we left off. So you get married. You've got a five-year-old, mm-hmm. Kim. And you guys get married. Kim, you're divorced. Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. So you have an ex-husband. And is your daughter moving between the two homes?
She is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys get together and you have two children of your own.
Right.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's somewhere in the story, there became some problems with mm-hmm. the other household. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah. We were pretty good peacefully co-parenting for the first 10 years after our divorce. But that's one of the funny things about co-parenting is that things can radically change. You don't have a lot of control over what's going on in that other house and the attitudes.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
You don't have a lot of control
over
what's going on and what the attitudes are. And so I tell you this story with a big question mark still in my mind as to why it happened, because we don't have answers around why this shift in attitude occurred. But at some point, my ex kind of got it in his mind that my daughter no longer needed us in her life. And he just kind of decided that she doesn't need to come to our house and she doesn't need to have a relationship with us. And I'm sure it was around control. But he put her in this position of, if you want to be loved and accepted by me, you've got to reject your mom.
Oh, goodness sakes. And how old was she when this started?
She was 12. So a very rough age already.
Right.
And then to be put in this position was excruciatingly tough.
Oh, my goodness.
All of us.
How did that impact her?
Well, she got lost, mm-hmm. honestly. Mm-hmm. My daughter was gone. Mm-hmm. She became a robotic puppet for him.
Wow.
And so she would come when we did see her. We went from 50-50 visitation, which we had done, like I said, for years and years, to down to, what was it, at the lowest point, like maybe...
like 11%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she would come with attitudes and all kinds of reasons why she shouldn't be there and just repeating things that he had told her to say to the guardian ad litem, to the counselor. She just wasn't there. There was a few times, moments where she would break, where I would see her. There she is. She's still there. But then it would all shut down. Mm-hmm. As soon as it came up, he would, put more pressure on. We didn't have a clear understanding of the kind of emotional and verbal abuse that was going on. We found out later.
I was about to ask you, what was the cost to her?
Yeah.
Let me just comment that one of the things we know about kids who are in these situations is there is some emotional cost, either real or perceived, in their relationship with the parent who is saying this to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm nice to mom, if I enjoy my stepdad, Mike, then, I'm losing something
That's
with dad.
Yes. Yeah.
And do you have a sense of what the cost was for her?
Complete control from the other household. So
you're losing my love and affection?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And control of her whole life, her extracurricular activities, her friends, her everything. I mean, at a stage where she should be venturing out and making decisions for herself and figuring it out, she was under his thumb completely. And it really stunted her growth.
And I know your heart was...
Oh. Mm. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through.
Did you get to see her on a regular basis through that time?
We did see her. Of course, he would intrude on that time and schedule all kinds of activities for her.
And her attitude wouldn't be good, so it'd be really hard.
It was hard to be around her.
It was difficult. What was interesting is when we would have, this was about a three-year period. So we were in the family court system for 3 years. Lots of time, energy, resources, everything went into this. And I think what was interesting is there were times where we would have vacations.
Yeah.
And we would have some extended time with her. And it took a day or two. But once that day or two passed, the walls started to come down.
Yeah.
She was away from, we would travel somewhere. And all of a sudden, we're like, there she is.
There she is.
There she is. Yeah.
You can see the light come back on.
She would emerge.
Yeah. Yep.
But it could just as easily be shut down if she called him.
Mm-hmm.
And you would see it. Her just, there was a, a vacation we were on, and she got to go rock climbing for the first time with my brother. He's a rock climber, and she was just loving it. She's kind of an adrenaline junkie, and she was having so much fun and enjoying herself, and she wanted to call and tell her dad. And I said, yeah, you know, call him, and her siblings in the other home, and she was so excited to tell them about her big feat, and you could just physically see her just slump. Mm-hmm. By his reaction, mm-hmm. he just shut her down. Didn't want to hear mm-hmm. about it. Didn't care.
That's the thing. If you're listening today and you know someone in that situation, or you are that parent who's doing that to your child,
yeah.
you have to have that image in your mind of this girl slumping over, going from joy to complete, you know, shutdown.
For hours after that.
Because essentially what you're asking them to do is to give up their joy, to give up their ability to enjoy life and people and relationships in the other home for you. You're asking them to take care of you, mm-hmm. and that's not right. Mm-hmm. It's costing them their childhood.
In fact, it's just the opposite. She was wanting to share with him.
Yeah.
She was wanting him to know and to be known by him.
Yeah. Okay,
and
so...
he was shutting that down. Mm-hmm.
Have things improved?
Well...
well, so... Yeah, we're several years past this whole season now. What happened, essentially, we had this 3 years in the family court system, and there's an amazing story of God's providential hand on this that we experienced.
Yeah.
We wrapped that time up in the month of October. I can't remember the year that it was, but we felt like we had lost. After 3 years of battle, I think we were at 30-some-odd% of our time with our daughter. And
she still had the walls up.
She still had walls
up.
And we just absolutely thought that, why have we been through all of this?
We were crushed.
And I got to imagine, like, the disciples right after the crucifixion has got to be going, why did we go through all this? Like, really? And now it's just over. That's how it felt. That's how we felt.
We couldn't believe it.
And so literally 1 month later, Thanksgiving weekend, the most terrible thing to happen happened, but it brought healing and redemption. And that was that her dad crossed the line of a physical attack in her home. She locked herself in her bedroom, went out her window. She came to our home. And by the next week, we were immediately back into the court. The judge said, now we're done. He said, I've been listening to this. I don't want to hear any more of it. The guardian ad litem finally got to a place of saying, okay, now we can do something different. And the guardian ad litem essentially said, I knew that something was coming.
The counsel, they all knew.
We had to let it be her decision. Otherwise, she would just keep running back. And then she called for one last meeting, and she said, I just want you to know, this young lady has been through all of this. She's used to a parent who is very authoritarian. You two are much more authoritative, allowing her to make decisions for herself, and she's not going to know what to do with that freedom. And we thought, whatever. We don't know what you're doing. We're so joyful. We're going to get time with our daughter. And her walls were down.
Yeah, she was spelling
back.
It. Yeah.
It was like this instantaneous return of our daughter.
Yeah.
And then
we went
through a really difficult time just in our home of her making really poor choices.
The person was right. Once the thumb of control was lifted.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, like,
yeah, because she finally had some freedom, some say in her life, and she didn't know how to handle it.
Right.
Because
exactly.
In those young and formative years when she should have been making decisions and failing and learning, that was removed. And so now she looked to her peers to make her decisions. So whatever environment she was in, she looked for someone else. And she just, it was 3 more years of rebellion.
And she was in your home at that time.
Yeah,
how old was
she
when all this happened? 15.
She was 15.
So 12 when the alienation process started, 15 at this point when she's back in your home. And things were really rough at that point.
So we went from fighting for her, investing everything we had into freeing her from the situation, to when she turned 18, we had to ask her to leave our home because things were so, we had to set some strong boundaries and okay. do the tough love thing.
So I got to just pause and talk. Let's talk to that listener for a minute that's mm-hmm. in the middle of all this. Mm-hmm. Whatever their story is, they're in the middle of hard. And I'm thinking about, you know, you guys, how did you protect your marriage in the midst of the stress? What did you do to stay alive? How did you protect yeah. your own kind of well-being? What your relationship with God? I mean,
yeah. Well, throughout that court battle, we didn't protect our marriage. Hmm. We saw it as really noble that we were going to allow some of the energy that we would have put into us to be put on the back burner because we were after saving this child. Mm-hmm. You know, here, this is near and dear to Kim's heart because this is her daughter. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's near and dear to my heart because of the environment that I grew up in. And I got it. I was like, man, I know what this poor kid is going through. Mm. How could we not fight for her? And so we didn't invest in our marriage. And it was on the tail end of that that we almost lost our marriage because we didn't make that investment.
Okay, I just got to say, I totally get that. Mm. Like, I don't blame you at all. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, you are 100% after rescuing this child mm-hmm. from her situation. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, flip around it the other side. Yeah, honey, let's go out and have a happy dinner and go on a date and enjoy ourselves when knowing at the same time that our daughter is over here miserable and sick and, you know, and stressed out and, you know, but we can enjoy life.
I was in a pit.
That doesn't make sense.
I was in a pit of depression.
Absolutely.
During a lot of that, just emotionally distraught. There was no way. But I remember that season of Mike being my whole support. I mean, I was crumbling left and right, and he was just there. He was holding me up. He was my shoulder to cry on. He was the one praying for me constantly and just in there with me. So, I mean, we came out of that season as a united team in fighting this battle, but our romance, there was no romance.
Yeah. And what about God? I mean, was he distant? Was he close? I mean,
yes.
All of the above.
Which day are you talking about, Ron?
Yes.
There were times when I was just so angry at God because we felt him telling us, fight. Yeah. I will provide. I will carry you through, which he did.
And then, but the action wasn't there and the response.
Didn't feel like
we
it was
just
there.
Couldn't get it. But I also got little at my worst points when I was just done and distraught, God would give me a picture of her heart, of where she really is. She's still there. Mm. She's still bonded
Don't
to you.
Don't give up. Don't be defeated.
She needs you to fight for her. Mm. She needs you to know that you're going to be there when she's ready.
You know, I've come to call that daily bread. You know, it's give us this day our daily bread. It's not just physical sustenance to sustain us, but God in really hard times. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that even in my own life, that you get just enough. Mm. But let's not minimize.
Yeah.
This stinks.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is hard. And you are agonizing day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And then you wake up one day and realize your marriage has drifted. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Where did that lead you?
Ooh. Well, we had a couple of discussions about, are we going to continue this on?
It all came to a head on our worst vacation ever.
So we had probably the worst six-hour drive home.
From this trip, we left early.
With our younger kids going, what's going on? Like, we were having fun. And we're throwing things in the van and we're getting out of there. Super awkward drive home.
It's amazing how you can be sitting right next to each other and be so far apart.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we had about a three-day standoff after that.
Didn't where speak for 3 days.
Exactly that, right next to each other, but just worlds apart.
When you're running dry in the romance department, as far as the step couple goes, it's those step family dynamics that just completely shred you apart. I mean, we thought we had stuff down. We'd been married
10 years.
We thought we'd had things down. And it was around parenting. Hmm. It was around all those dynamics, the stuck inside or stuck outside or all those things. And it just compiled and compiled and compiled. And we were heading out on this trip. And, man, the last straw hit and we just crumbled.
It was all around parenting and parenting agreements and not
Annika.
Being able to.
So did all that, this may be oversimplifying, but did all that stress just basically get turned towards each other?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And our family of origin stuff, the abandonment issues, all of it just bubbled up to the surface. Mm-hmm. And we realized, man, we have some work to do.
And I, coming out of the childhood I came from, I had some real anger issues. And so I started to see some behavior that would come out of me during that season that reminded me of stepmom. I never crossed the line of any physical abuse toward any family member, but there was a point where Kim was locked in the upstairs bathroom because she was afraid of me. I'd been throwing some things around the garage and that kind of thing. And that picture of my wife being scared to death of me, so scared in the middle of the night, and praise God, the kids were still asleep and we didn't wake them up. How we didn't wake them up, I don't know.
It was bad.
But that picture was like, something has to change.
And that had to tap into your experience as a kid.
Oh, man, yeah. Like I said, I mean, I came 10 years before that. I'm sitting in a room and you are telling me that I don't have to repeat the past, essentially. I mean, you didn't say those words, but all of what you taught was like, oh, wow, we can do something different. And then we get to that moment and I'm going, oh, no, this is the same. I can't do this. And so before we got married, Kim with me is adamant. If we run into a roadblock, are you willing to go get help? I'm like, yeah, you know, we'll go to counseling, whatever, you know.
Of course, I
want to marry her. Of course, I'm going to say yes, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So we say that, but we get to this point now, and I'm like, okay, now's the time. Hmm. It's time to go get help. We need help. We can't keep doing this. Hmm. And Kim was like, no. I don't want to get help. I don't want to get help with that.
Funny. I was tired.
I'm done.
Funny how that works.
I know. It is funny. And so I said, well, after much talk with a mentor and prayer, look, if I'm going to lead this family, then I guess I'm going to lead this family. And so I said, I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm going to go get help. I don't know what this is going to look like together, but I'm going. And so I did. I went and got connected, and I started that process. And
he started working on his stuff, too.
Started working on just me. And it was very quickly after that that Kim came in. And I think it was maybe about 8-9 months of some pretty difficult work. But it was almost as if after 8 or 9 months, the fog just lifted. And we were like, hey, look, we're still in love. And we're having an awesome time. We've been through some stuff. And what a deepening of relationship after walking through those things together.
Yeah, and we both had baggage that needed to get unpacked. It wasn't just Mike's stuff. I had my whole set of baggage. And from my previous, I've actually been married twice before Mike. So this was my third marriage, and I had all kinds of stuff I dragged into this marriage. So we needed to do our own individual work. And then we came together and did counseling together for a season, and that was really helpful.
Well, my mind's racing. I want to commend you guys on so many different things there. I mean, that moment where, Mike, you say, I'm going, whether you'll come with me or not, I'm going. I think a lot of times spouses get stuck and their spouse doesn't want to go with them. Mm-hmm. And so they go, well, then what's the point? Mm-hmm. No, you go ahead and go. There's some value in that for you. You never know what God's going to show you and what you can change about you. But but even notice that the process of leading out influences the other partner.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right? You go first. That's always the way it is. You go first. And it did lead eventually. Kim, you joined him.
And I saw some changes he was making, and I saw the value that he was getting from it.
Yeah. Kind of shifted your heart a little bit.
It really did.
So now I'm willing to go, and so you go, and now that you're both on a journey, and the process ultimately led you back together.
I just wasn't quite ready to do the work yet, and I'd been to counseling before, but there was some new work I needed to do, and he was ready, and then I got there.
And I think we should note that the situation with your daughter is still going on. Like, mm-hmm. it's still not resolved. And yep. while this is happening inside your home, inside with your family, you're raising two other children, you're yeah. trying to save your marriage, and there's this still this appendage that's not fixed.
Stop. Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard to be divided like that. Mm-hmm. Two or three things are wrong, and you're trying to, you can work on one or two of them, and you get some progress, but then there's one that just still isn't what you want.
Yeah.
What do you say to couples who are listening right now who go, man, I know exactly what that one thing is. Maybe it's two things. You know, there's a lot of good things going on in our home, but there's one thing that's really not okay. Yeah. What would you say to them about that feeling divided thing?
Well, I think one of the reasons we got to where we got was that we both kind of dug our heels in. I want it this way, and I want, you know, he wanted it that way. And we both kind of just felt like, well, this is the right thing to do. And we got hung up in that place rather than really listening to what was going on and the motives behind it. You know, Mike was trying to tell me how to parent my kid. That's how I saw it. You know, don't tell me how to parent my kid. I know what's best. But he really had some different insights, and he wanted good things for my daughter. He wanted good things for me. And he had a lot of value to bring. I just wouldn't hear it. I got really defensive, and, you know, I took it personally. But when I finally listened to what was behind his reasoning and why he believed what he believed, you know, he's right. Mm. I do have a parental blind spot here or there. Mm. You know, there is some value in that. And he had to do the same process with me. There's a reason why I'm digging my heels in here. And he had to listen to my perspective of, okay, I see that. That got us, instead of being on opposite ends of the table, pounding our fists, yeah. it's got to be this way, it got us to the same side of the table to where we could start to compromise.
Yeah. What do you say to that person who's listening who's going, yeah, but that's risky, Kim?
Mm-hmm. It's very risky, I mean, you've got to be vulnerable to go there.
You had to trust him. You had to let him into your heart. You've mm-hmm. already been through two marriages. Mm-hmm. This isn't going well. He's not proven to be a guy that you can trust. Things are not happening well with your daughter. You're heart is in turmoil. Mm-hmm. How in the world can you talk yourself into trusting him and letting him in? How did you do that?
Interject. I would say that didn't begin coming until I became more trustworthy.
Okay.
When I started doing the work that allowed me to
be safer for her.
Yeah. Yeah. To be safer, to hold her with loving hands. And not try to just get what I wanted.
So we're back to you leading out, going first, not just going to counseling, but changing.
It had to happen that way for us.
His heart softened first, for sure.
And then that led to yours.
And I saw the softening. Mm-hmm. And then that made it safer for me to let down my walls and then enter into some real deep dialogue.
You guys are a lot like me and a lot of other people I know that you've been through some stuff. And when you kind of get your head above water again, you think, we need to give back. Is that your journey? Is that how you got into coaching, doing step family coaching? I mean,
absolutely.
Why in the world?
I mean, I think from a passion standpoint and a motivation standpoint, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Not only is it that we've been through some stuff, but I know, at least for me personally, my passion goes all the way back to the day I was born, being part of a step. I've never not lived in step family life. I know how tough it is to be a step brother. I know how tough it is to be a step child. I know a step parent. It's not easy, but it can be really good. There are really wonderful relational things that happen that maybe wouldn't have happened any other way in my life.
Yeah, beautiful things have
Absolutely.
Come through the struggle. You know, like when we meet with a couple that's dealing with what we dealt with through parental alienation or dealing with a really difficult ex, and we're able to listen and we're able to really understand the emotion that turmoil that's in there. And just be that person that gets them and that they can really be open and vulnerable with. Mm. If we can do that, I mean, that's just amazing. If what we've been through can help another couple, that makes it all worthwhile for me. And we had couples doing that for us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And they meant everything, you know, because a lot of times you don't know what to pray for.
Right.
You are just banging your head up against that wall going, okay, God, what do you want? I don't know. And when someone comes alongside and has a deep understanding of your emotional pain and can pray for you on your behalf, there's something just healing about that.
I'm sure people are wondering, have things improved with your daughter?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, I mean, she still struggles to set boundaries with her dad, and she's learning. She's learned how to have a relationship with him as best she can, which is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, she needs to have a relationship with him and with his kids. But she's learned to set boundaries, which is wonderful. But she's,
Not only that, I mean, that's all true and that's great. She's maturing. She's 23 now. She just turned 23 last month, actually. And she got herself back into school. She got, she's gotten clean time, which has been incredible for over 3 years now.
Yeah.
And she's figuring it out. She's challenged by the things we all have been challenged by at 23 years old, but she's figuring it out and she's wanting to do life well. And so that's pretty incredible. And the fact that we now have just an easy, loving relationship with her.
She invites us in.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Awesome.
She comes to us for advice, and she lets us coach her. It's awesome, with life stuff, and she trusts us, and she's very loving and appreciative. And we look back on that time, and we sometimes talk about it. It's painful for both of us, but she realizes what she put us through.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point she even apologized,
yeah.
Which we never thought we'd get and didn't expect. It was a gift, but she definitely understands a lot about what kids go through.
My conversation with Mike and Kim Anderson. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. Mike and Kim have a little more to share in just a minute, but I feel like there was something Mike said that got lost in our conversation. You remember back at the beginning, he said coming to my conference not only helped prepare them for their blended family journey, but it got Mike processing his childhood, the family he grew up in. It gave him some perspective that he needed to make sense of some things, which helped him to then find mercy for his parents, which then helped him forgive his parents, which then ultimately helped him reconcile with his parents. You know, I've heard this a lot through the years. I think it happens to a lot of people, maybe even you. Maybe you're finding yourself reflecting back on your childhood. You know, when you're a kid, it's hard to process everything that's going on in your home and in your life. You have a child's perspective, you have a child's maturity, and you're limited by that. And sometimes, as adults, learning how to grow your own family can help you reflect on what we call your family of origin, your extended stepfamily relationships that you have even now. Let me just invite you, as you listen to this podcast over time, ask God to help you reflect, to give you insight into the family you grew up in, to show you what you couldn't have seen in your younger days through a child's eyes, so that you can now, perhaps, like Mike, be an instrument of God's peace. See, here's the deal. At times, this process will be painful. It's usually going to be uncomfortable because it's going to bring up things that maybe didn't feel really good to you at a season of your life. It may be confusing for you, but more often than not, going down this road is well worth it. We'll hear from Mike and Kim in just a minute. If you'd like more information about them, you'll find it in the show notes at familylife.com/podcasts. You can also learn about our other podcasts on the Family Life Podcast Network. Please know that we want to hear from you. We appreciate your feedback, and positive online reviews are really appreciated. If you haven't subscribed to us yet, you can do so on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you download your podcasts. Just search Family Life Blended with Ron Deal, and maybe If you like what you hear, you'll help us spread the word, maybe to a friend, a family member. Share this podcast with them. Maybe you could post something online about the Family Life Blended podcast. We would really appreciate that. Hey, I know you're invested in your marriage and your family, so be sure to check out the articles and videos and resources for blended families that we have at familylife.com/blended. You'll learn all about my Smart Step Family series of books and the curriculum we have for churches. And if you're interested in helping others, bringing a ministry to your church or to your community, consider joining us for the Summit on Step Family Ministry, October 24 and 25 in 2019 in Chesapeake, Virginia. This is a two-day ministry equipping event, and if you're interested, you should be there. You may be a lay leader, you may be a senior pastor, you may be on staff or work with a church counseling center, whatever your capacity. If you're interested in blessing others and learning how to do that, we would love to have you join us. If you're new to Step Family Ministry, you'll learn all the basics. And if you've already got a ministry up and running, we'll help you network with others and learn about the latest resources and find encouragement as a leader. You can learn more about this event at summitonstepfamilies.com. Now here's the rest of my conversation with Mike and Kim. We're talking about what do you do when things are hard? Yeah. Okay. So if somebody's still in the hard, what do you want them to do? Connect to somebody, find some community, people to pray for
reach
them.
Reach out.
Yeah. I think one, have hope. First of all, just because it feels like you're stuck in this forever experience right now doesn't mean it's forever.
Okay.
It's a season right now.
Okay.
And so you can move through that season, but two, reach out for support and reach out for practical help because there's so much you can learn. You don't need to be a child psychologist and you don't need to be a therapist in order to run your family
or
move your family forward, I should say. And so there's lots of help out there. You just have to go find it.
Yeah, I would add to that. Be anticipating that God's going to use it. I mean, whatever you're going through, on the other end of it, God has something he's going to use. I mean, it's amazing what our daughter has been through was really difficult on her. It took a toll, and she still struggles in certain things. But her dad has since gone through another divorce. So those siblings that she has from that side are now stuck in that dilemma. They've got two parents battling back and forth, and there's all kinds of stuff going on. And she is able to minister to these kids, these siblings, and understand what they're going through and talk with them about it. And we pray for those kids. And I have anticipation of God using her later of ministering to kids that are stuck in these dynamics and need a place to process.
Absolutely.
And talk. So believe and have hope that God is going to turn this into something for his glory.
Wow. That's really amazing. It's hard to keep that perspective sometimes when you're in the valley.
It's really hard.
It is.
But to somehow have a sense that God is in it and you don't know where it's going to go or where it's going to end up, but trust him in the hard and believe that someday maybe you'll see what those purposes are.
Yeah. And be willing to put in the work. You know, I mean, I remember that one of the reasons I didn't engage in counseling was because it felt so huge. How are we ever going to dig our way out from this mountain?
Right.
It just was so overwhelming. But once we got in there and started shoveling and working on stuff, you know, looking back, it really wasn't that long of a period
of
time. I mean, once we put in the effort, we were both in, it wasn't as big and looming as we thought it was. So be willing to just step forward and do what you can. And
it's okay. Some of the best work I've ever done is the hardest work I've ever done.
Next time on the Family Life Blended podcast, I'm going to talk with Michelle Couchet about making peace with the life you have and making peace with God.
I believed at 27, because I was divorced, that I was completely excluded from any participation in the kingdom. that being divorced meant that I was no longer qualified to do anything in God's name because I had committed what I believe was the unpardonable sin.
That's Michelle Couchette, next time on Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for listening, and thank you to our Family Life Legacy partners for making this podcast possible. Our chief audio engineer is Keith Lynch, Bruce Goff, producer. Our mastering engineer is Justin Adams, and theme music provided by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is provided by Family Life and is part of the Family Life Podcast Network.